The U.S. trade deficit gets a little smaller.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. It's the Morning Open. I'm Steve Chiotakis. The only people doing a lot of work today in Greece seems to be the police. That's coming up. First, where's Wall Street? The S&P is down by a third of a percent, the NASDAQ by nearly a half a percent, and the Dow off 30 points exactly at 10,537. European shares are lower right now, too, by under a quarter of a percent. Asian shares were flat today after China reported higher inflation and Japan reported a downward revised GDP for the fourth quarter. We got word this morning that our nation's trade deficit got smaller. Imports dropped, including oil and foreign cars, but surprisingly so did exports. And that could mean a lot down the road. Julia Coronado is a senior U.S. economist at BNP Paribas. She joins us live from New York this morning. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
As a headline, this really sounds like good news. The trade deficit's narrowed. I mean, is there any part of this that's good news?
It is good news that the trade deficit is narrowing. Obviously, that's been a problem for the U.S. economy for a while, and it is moving in the right direction. It also means that a widening deficit isn't going to weigh on growth in the first quarter. Trade looks like it'll be about neutral in terms of growth.
Go ahead. Now, does this say more about the United States or the people that we're trading with? I mean, are we lagging behind this global recovery?
We are not the star of the recovery this time around, that's for sure. Emerging markets are seeing much stronger recoveries than the U.S., and also Europe is lagging behind as well. So some of our trading partners are seeing stronger recoveries, and in general, exports have been very, very strong in recent months, although, as you noted, exports faded a bit as well in January.
I want to talk a little bit about initial jobless claims. We got the report today from the Labor Department that the claims are lower, but not by much, like what 6,000, I think, last week. I'm getting the impression, Julia, that companies aren't laying off people like they were, but they certainly aren't hiring either. I mean, where is this corner that we're supposed to turn?
Well, yeah, the jobless claims numbers certainly suggest that the labor market is a little bit stuck right now. We haven't the firing has slowed or stopped, but we haven't yet seen indications that employers are really willing to add to their workforce. And they still, I think, employers feel a lot of uncertainty about the recovery and how strong their businesses will be going forward. So we haven't yet seen indications that they have the confidence to hire workers.
Julia Coronado from BNP Paribas, thanks.
My pleasure.
Protesters in Greece are worried about their jobs and their dwindling paychecks. Public and private sector workers have taken to the streets today, chanting, "No sacrifice for the rich." They're complaining that Greece's budget cuts put in place to slash that country's enormous debt are hurting workers and not the people who caused the problem in the first place. Reporter Joanna Kakissis is with us now from Constitution Square near the parliament. Joanna, are you with us?
Yeah, hi, I'm a little tear gassed, but okay.
Oh, jeez. Tell me what you're seeing right now.
Well, there are tens of thousands of protesters here. Most of the people are on a general strike, which is what happens in all of Greece is on today. And they've gathered around Parliament Square right now and have started to fight with police. And they're riot police all over, armed with tear gas, with riot gear on. And there was a little outbreak of violence. I'm thinking that there's going to be another one because people are putting on their masks again.
Why are they so angry, Joanna?
Well, the second set of austerity measures that George Papandreou, the prime minister, announced last week got a lot of people angry because it cut into already low wages in Greece. And the public sector here feels that they're paying for a mess that they didn't cause.
Do the Greeks, Joanna, do they understand that there are so many severe ramifications if Greece defaults on its debts?
Yes, I think they do understand that the problems are very serious, but I also think that the average Greek thinks that he or she cannot give any more than they already have. The average wage here is about 700 to 800 euros a month, which is very low, one of the lowest in Europe. One guy told me, well, I don't care if Greece collapses because I've already personally collapsed. I don't have anything else to give.
Joanna Kakissis, thank you. We appreciate you being with us today from Athens.
Thanks.
listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, March 11th, 2010, at marketplace.org. There's another round in the hot seat today for federal auto safety regulators. A House panel holds a meeting this morning into whether the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration needs to get tougher on automakers. As Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon reports, the debate is taking place amid lingering questions over the safety of Toyota vehicles.
The high drama that played out on a freeway near San Diego this week seized the nation's attention. A frantic driver's call for help as he struggled for control of his Toyota Prius.
A Prius?
Yeah.
And what's going on? Is your accelerator stuck?
Yeah.
Whatever's going wrong with a relatively small number of Toyotas, though, does all this attention reflect some kind of wider breakdown of automotive safety? The industry answers with an emphatic no, insisting today's vehicles are safer than ever. And its lobbying group contends the effectiveness of what it calls tough but fair regulation is borne out by the data. Wade Newton speaks for the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers.
Those numbers show a decline in fatalities and injury rates, even as miles traveled and as the number of vehicles on the roadway has gone up during the same period.
The automakers group recently argued in a letter to lawmakers that Congress has consistently exceeded budget requests for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. But former Administrator Joan Claybrook insists the agency is suffering from a woeful lack of resources.
Its total budget is $132 million, a pittance to run a government agency that regulates all motor vehicles in the United States. It's so incapable of doing its job with that limited amount of money.
Beyond that, Claybrook says the agency needs authority to press criminal charges against carmakers that resist recalling vehicles they know are defective.
The auto industry has sort of treated this agency as a sucker. They've tried to manipulate it, and they don't respect it. And I think it's time for that to stop.
For its part, the industry says it wants government regulators to have, quote, all the resources needed. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
The International Air Transport Association said today global airlines are doing better than expected, though some places are doing better than others. Meantime, in the United States, airlines are fighting back with new regulations. Marketplace's Elisa Roth is with us live from our New York studio to talk about it. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning.
So how much better are airlines really doing?
In some measure, this is just one of those it's good news because it's not as bad as we thought stories. The International Air Transport Association, which speaks for the industry, says the whole sector will only lose $2.8 billion this year. So yes, it's a lot of money, but it's half of what they'd predicted just a few months ago.
Is that true, Elisa, across the board, or are there regional differences going on?
There are some big regional differences. U.S. and European carriers will probably keep losing money this year. Companies have cut their travel budgets and people just aren't flying as much. But in Latin America and Asia, airlines are actually expected to earn money this year, and demand in both of those regions is actually growing.
And some U.S. carriers are still having a hard time, right?
That's right. But they're also fighting back, or at least it seems like they're fighting back against some new regulations. At the end of next month, new rules go into effect that'll basically fine airlines for keeping passengers on the tarmac for more than 3 hours without giving them a chance to get off the plane. And what airlines are saying is that they're going to avoid that problem, you know, avoid those fines by canceling flights much more aggressively. So if there's even a hint that there could be weather problems.
All right. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reporting from New York. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
The British energy giant BP is heading to Brazil. Why Brazil? It turns out that South American nation and its coastal waters could be the next big oil reserve. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
BP bought a chunk of oil assets from the U.S. firm Devon Energy. The price, $7 billion in cash. The deal includes offshore exploration licenses in Brazil. The oil won't be easy to get at. It's buried deep under the ocean floor, many miles out at sea. But Peter Kemp, editor at Energy Intelligence, says there does appear to be a lot of oil in the region.
There have been dramatic discoveries in the subsalt deep under the ocean with upwards of 8 billion barrels already proven by the Brazilian state company.
BP is well qualified to operate in deep water. It's already the largest producer in the Gulf of Mexico, where it drilled the deepest oil well anywhere, 36,000 feet deep, which is about the height of Mount Everest. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Google's CEO Eric Schmidt says his company may soon reach a conclusion from the talks with the Chinese government. Now, Google could even pull out entirely, which would hurt several companies Google works with in China, including Motorola, who helps make Google smartphones. Marketplace Asia Bureau Chief Scott Tong is with us now from Shanghai. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Steve.
It seems like sometimes it's hard for a company to know how to operate in such an unstable market. What do companies do?
Well, in this case, you bet on multiple horses, as Motorola's done, in case one of the horses goes down, as in Google ditching China, as it's threatened to do here. So the Motorola smartphones in China will offer Google search and a Chinese company search engine, and now a third one called Bing from Microsoft. I spoke to Richard Robinson in Beijing. He runs a mobile gaming company there called Cookie Panda. And he says, yeah, Motorola is hedging its bets, but there's more going on.
But it also, I'm sure, probably has to do with Microsoft's really aggressive budget in trying to grab as much market share as they can with Bing. And I think if they're going to be smelling blood, sort of the most interesting market is here in China.
And just to jolt you this morning, Steve, with some giant China numbers, there are 700 million mobile phone users in China right now. And by one projection, it'll be 1.1 billion in 4 years, Steve.
Amazing. But wait a second. Now, Motorola phones use an operating system, Scott, that's from Google, right? I mean, if Google ditches China, what would happen to that?
Well, that's a great question. It's called Android, this software, and nobody really knows. I mean, the Google CEO says something will happen soon as far as decision in China. The folks I talk to say Google could kind of leave. That is, they could pack up their search engine and go and make a political point, and then they leave the less censorable stuff still in China, like research and development and their mobile phone team, Steve.
Marketplace Asia correspondent Scott Tong joining us from Shanghai. Scott, thanks.
You're welcome.
Got a gloomy foreclosure report this morning. One out of every 418 U.S. homes was foreclosed upon last month. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports on what's behind those numbers.
RealtyTrack says foreclosures are up 6% over last year. That is the smallest annual increase in 4 years. But RealtyTrack Senior Vice President Rick Sharga says foreclosures have slowed only because banks are overwhelmed by foreclosure paperwork.
We're running it at roughly 6 to 7 times the level of foreclosure activity that the banks are set up to handle. It's a little bit of a pig in a python scenario where it's just taking an awful long time to process the sheer volume of bad loans that are out there.
Sharga says we're in the midst of a second wave of foreclosures caused by unemployment. And Guy Sakala, who publishes the newsletter Inside Mortgage Finance, says we might need to brace ourselves for a third wave, coming from people who are underwater on their mortgages, owing more than their homes are worth.
Is that going to cause another, if not wave, at least certainly a ripple through the foreclosure thing of people just making a conscious decision to walk away from it?
RealtyTrack's Sharga thinks foreclosures will peak later this year. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, Microsoft founder Bill Gates has lost his crown. He's no longer the world's richest man. That honor, according to Forbes magazine, goes to Carlos Slim. The Mexican telecommunications giant is worth about $53.5 billion. He beat out Gates by a mere $500 million. Pocket change. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.